Welcome to the Phoenix Remix. My name is Jacob Norman, and I am your podcast host. Welcome to episode number 4. I started this podcast with the goal of interviewing everybody in the beauty industry. We at Phoenix Salon Education believe that everybody is a master at something. And more importantly, everybody has a story. So we decided to record some of these stories and share them with you. Join me every Wednesday as we chat with people in the beauty industry about the things that they are most passionate about. And who knows, maybe someday we can even record your story. One of my favorite things about doing this podcast is getting to hear everybody's origin stories. Some people were born into the beauty industry, and some people found it by mistake. Our guest today entered the beauty industry more as a punishment than anything. But, as you will hear, that punishment was not only the best thing for him, but it may have even been one of the best things for this industry. I was very excited to chat with our guest today because I have looked up to him since I've been doing hair, and I've been looking up to his craft for as long as I can remember. I am very excited to introduce a fantastic hairdresser, hair cutter, and all-around hair artist, as well as one of my favorite educators and the founder of Mazzella and Palmer Academy and Salon, Mr. J.B. Mazzella. So the power of social media is very amazing, especially compared to when I first started doing hair. My first guest today, I think, is a great example of that. We live thousands and thousands of miles away, and yet we were still able to meet up over Instagram, and here we are on the podcast today. I'm very excited to introduce an amazing educator, fantastic artist, and, you know, I'm just going to let him kind of talk about all he does, Mr. J.B. Mazzella. Good morning. Good morning here.
Yeah, so good morning to you and good evening here in London. Hi, everyone. So I'm J.B., thrilled to be here with you and Jacob to do this podcast. So basically, very, very quick background, but been in the hairdressing industry now for almost 25 years, and been now a full-time educator and a brand owner for the last 15 years.
Before we go any farther, I think there's a congratulations in store for you.
Aha!
I saw your post this morning, so congratulations.
Thank you very much. My first little one is on the way. So very, very emotional morning this morning. And you know what? With, you know, such as your introduction of the podcast, when you talk about the power of social media, like how, like, it's so emotional to see that a lot of people comment and likes and give you support and congratulates. And it's really amazing. Truly, truly amazing. So thank you so much for everyone that have seen the post, and then wish us luck with my wife and I for our first little one.
Gosh, I'm so excited for you. It's going to be amazing.
Thank you.
So let's jump into your career. So you said you've been doing this for about 25 years. How did you get started as a hairdresser?
I started when I was 15, pure coincidence, actually, because I originally wanted to be, I liked traveling. So I was kind of in between thinking of being a hair steward, so on the plane, and on the other side, I always liked architecture. So I really liked car design. So that was one of my second choice. But I got expelled from school 1 week because of a silly situation of me wearing the wrong trousers. I had some kind of hole on the knees and stuff. And in France, I had a very, very classic teacher at the time that did not want you to be kind of different. I think in a place where at the time you could dress whatever you wanted to dress with, he was probably more liking the way that France should have a uniform. So it was not so nice to white children that were different, right? Because I was always a bit kind of, you know, the one that used to always wanted to play, to have fun and so on and so on. So when I finally ended up at the end of the year, got expelled, my mom was furious. And my kind of punition, if you can say that, so like what I had to do, my compulsory things for my mom to do during that week, was to come and work in a salon for that time. And this is actually how I actually started to like hairdressing, because all of my life I grew up in a hair salon, but then more as a habit, I would say. You know, you finish school, you go and see the family, and then you go to work and so on and so on. I remember very well all the smells of perms, and so, you know, smell that I like, smell that I didn't. But you know what really struck me on that week was always the fact that people often came in not so happy, or often came in with a certain face on. But one thing that everyone came out of the hair salon with was a happy smile. And I felt like it was a very good kind of like happy atmosphere within that week. So basically, this is how at the end of the week, I decided to become a hair assistant.
So was your mom in the hair industry already, or why did she say that you should go assist at the hair salon for the week?
Because she used to run the business. So basically, okay. So basically, you know, she had three salons, and then one salon, the main one, because I'm coming from a very small town in the south of France. About 5,000 people live there all year long. I mean, it's coast. So if you know, it's like, I don't know how I can compare that to in America, but basically like Saint-Tropez area is one of the most luxurious part of Europe in terms of holidays, but it's dead in the winter. So you've got very, very small villages of 4,000 or 5,000 people, ending up being almost like 1 million tourists coming in the summer because of the beach. So this is the area where we're from. So one of the actual salon that she had was very near the school. So I think for her, it was a way to say, well, instead of having a week off because you've been naughty at school, you're going to come to the hair salon and you're going to give us a hand. So this is kind of like it worked. But what was really amazing, Jacob, during that week, it's the fact that she was very clever about it, because she wanted to share with me a little bit of her passion with her craft. And what she did was, instead of just make me sweep the floor and clean up the shelf of the product for dust and so on, she actually, like, you know, made me touch the hair sometimes. She introduced me to how to do a shampoo. You know, they do all those kind of wave set in France, specifically back in the day. You had all the older ladies coming every week for the set and style. You know, she made me kind of remove the rollers when it was still warm on the head, explain to me how to reset the wave with your fingers, you know. And I think it's very interesting, because she was very, I think, not that she wanted to push me in that direction, because my mom's always been amazing on letting me free will, and my sister is the same. But what she's done that was very good is, at the end of the actual week, she sat me in the office and she said to you, now I want to show you something a little bit different. What I believe is the top of the tree in this industry. And I sat down watching the first ever hair education VHS at the time, it was, because there was no DVD. It was the first it was a VHS, and I saw someone cutting hair, but the English way. And then it's nothing that I've seen before when I was in France. And it was really amazing, because that person had a way to explain what he was doing, and it looked like architecture on a real person. And I think this is why Arthur made me choose that decision to become a hairdresser.
So tell me a little bit more about the English way.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, the thing what I really believe now, when I look at it with obviously being in the trade for quite a long time, is that it's always been a fight between, I guess, the Latin hairdressing versus the English haircutting, right? Or the English precision haircutting. And I think, you know, my mom always was much more into this all, I would say, manipulation of hair. You know, I think this is what's very interesting when you look at France, you look at Italy, you look at Spain, you look at Greece, the hair is much thicker, is much more wiry, sometimes often even curly, frizzy. So that's why there is a lot of blow drying skills. And clients often come to the salon every week to get a beautiful blow dry and have the hair really nice and, you know, and set. Where I think in the UK is very different. In the UK, clients have finer hair, like North Europe, and they tend to kind of want to have a very good, precise haircut so they can just wash and go. Mm-hmm. So I think when I was actually looking at what was happening in terms of France, I knew that for me, because of I wanted to become a car designer in the past, building a shape was the thing that I was very attracted to. That's why naturally I got attracted to actually wanting to come to London to learn about British precision cutting.
Mm-hmm. So you do the week at the salon. How do you end up to where you are now? Like, what was the next couple of steps? Where did you do your assisting at?
Well, the first thing is I went to see that that teacher that had problem with the way that I was wearing my clothes, because I was actually quite good at school. But I told him, this is it. I've made my decision. I'm turning basically 16 in 2 weeks. So legally, I'm allowed to leave school and I'm going to start hairdressing. So that was the first thing. He was a bit shocked because, you know, everything was ready for me to go to mathematical studies for architecture. So it was actually quite good that I could straight away went to, you know, a different type of world and start working. So I did 2 years of apprenticeship in France. You have to do 2 years, it's compulsory, but then there's a third and fourth year if you want to do, to have a diploma, and if you pass that diploma, you can open a hair salon. Because in France, you need to have a specific diploma to be a salon owner. If you do not have this special diploma, you cannot open your own salon. So I actually did that diploma in 1 year instead of two, I fast-tracked it. And then once I had both my diplomas in hand, I think I was something like 19 years old, I moved to London.
And how was that move to London?
So moving to London, first of all, it was a present from my mom. I think that was for my 18th birthday. So it was a year later, I could use the present. I did a week course. I did a week course in, it was Vidal Sassoon at the time, because now they've changed the name. And when I was doing the course there, I met a few of my friends. I had Pedro, who's now running a brand called Alilon. I don't know if you've heard. They do a lot of education with Davines.
Yes, I've heard.
And then basically Pedro said to me, oh, you have to work with us. You know, you'd be brilliant here. So I did my application form. And it was, I think, probably a few days later, I went to do a cutting test. And here, this was very interesting because the cutting test was with a gentleman called Tim Hartley. Tim used to be the international creative director of Sassoon. And the funny thing was, Tim was the stylist that originally cut hair on that VHS that my mom sat me down to watch.
No way. That's so awesome.
Yeah. So for me, it was really weird because I was like on the front of, I was like, is that real? So, you know, imagine it's like if one day, I don't know, you play football and then you see someone kind of like on TV when you're a child and then you get to do a practice with. You see what I mean? It was really, really, really surreal. But it was very nice. And straight away on the day, he said to me that I got the job. But sadly, what happened is September the 11th, dramatical thing just happened. And this really sad moment basically stopped a lot of, I think, movements globally, I guess. I think what happened at the time is that a lot of international students did not travel to London by fear of flying. So I think a lot of educators either lost their job or went to salons to become a salon stylist because the academy were almost empty, you know. So I think that kind of gave me the chance, actually, in the next 6 months after that, to work in a very small, super cool, trendy salon in a beautiful road called Portobello Road, where there's one of the nicest kind of like antique market in London. And it was great because I learned English, because when I moved to France, my English was very, very poor. So that was really good to kind of being able to just very simply to kind of like practice my English, get used to living in the UK. And then 6 months later, when everything kind of like got back to normal, I moved to Sassoon. I worked there. I was quite happy, actually. I was quite, I was quite lucky. I got assistant creative director very, very quick after I started. A little bit later, I got creative director. And then I spent altogether about 10 years there before starting MMP.
After Sassoon, you started MP. How did you end up meeting, is it Dove?
Yeah, well, we basically worked together at Sassoon. He had the same job title as me. And then at the time, we had a very common views on basically, like, you know, where are we going for the future? And then I was about to go back to France, actually, because I had a lot of connection down there. And then I was about to open a Salon Academy in Paris. And I remember him, he was a bit shocked because that he did not think about like that I could go, because we, you know, we were really close friends at the time. And the following day he said to me, well, do you know what, let's do it together. You don't want to do it with me, let's do it together. And at the time I was like, well, do you know what, that could be a good idea, why not, you know, it's always nice to do something with friends. So we started MMP on the 25th of March 2011. We worked together for 8 years, and then we decided to split on December the 1st, basically. So yeah, he was, I think Dov was out of MMP on the 1st of January 2019. So this is how kind of like the kind of organically how it worked out until today.
I want to know, why education? If you were, because it sounds like you were a super talented hairstylist and you were really, you know, able to give your clients anything they would have asked for, why did you decide education was your path?
Well, I think that comes back to before MMP, because before MMP, I did education for, I stopped salon. I have not been in a salon situation now for the last 15 years. So I think, you know, I did the very busy clientele and I loved it. You know, even now, sometimes there's some moment when I'm thinking, oh my God, you know, life is actually not easier, but it's very pleasant when you're willing to work hard and you do all your clientele, because everyone have their little story to talk. You see them developing as much as they see you developing. You know, there's a really nice, it's like almost like a family atmosphere. And I really right. believe that your clientele is the reflection also of who you are, you know. So so this, I really, really enjoyed it. But why education? It's because I think that there is a moment in your life that if you reach a certain level of knowledge, that knowledge cannot die, and the only way for that knowledge to stay alive is to pass it on to others. So this is basically why, after, I thought that naturally education was a much better path for me, because I think, you know, we all have different sets of skills, and then I've always found that in terms of my personal skills and growth development, the actual people skills has always been something that I've never had to work hard on. It came to me pretty naturally. So I think that's why, I think when you can have an easier bond with people, it's easier to deliver information to them.
Yes, I totally agree. I like to hear kind of the first story of someone's first like teaching experience. I feel like a lot of times, you know, these hairstylists just out of beauty school, these hairstylists wanting to become something bigger and better, are scared of taking that first step because they don't know what it's going to be like. And I really like hearing the stories of like the first class that you taught and how you felt. Did it go great? Did it not go great? Let's talk about that.
That's a very good question. You know what? I've been doing interviews and those type of podcasts for many, many years now. And I've never had that question, but I think this is an absolute brilliant question. I like that one very much.
Well, thank you.
No, it's very good, actually. You know, surprised me with that one, because this is a very, very good question, specifically very relevant to now, because now, you know, I've actually had today again one person contacting me and asking me for advice, because they're very known in the industry, but in terms of what they do with the salon and what they do with the images, but they want now to become educators. So they were asking me a similar question about, you know, what's best road and so on and so on. That's why I think it's a very good question for now, because there's tons of new, young, emerging educators today. And for me, really, I thought that the first one, it was a very big slap on the head. You know, I did not think that went into being a bad day or a bad experience. Actually, it was a fantastic experience. I was teaching a group of Japanese, and we were three teachers, actually, but one was more kind of like overseeing everything, and the two of us were just teaching. And I remember the experience in terms of fun was incredible, because it was the last day of a course. It was a diploma ceremony. It was Run DMC music super loud at the background. We gave the diploma, almost doing some kind of hip hop dancing movement. The Japanese loved it. I mean, you know, that was tremendous. But on the other side, when it came to the work, I realized that I was doing a haircut, but as the salon stylist, and I was trying to explain basically what I was doing, right?
Right.
Suddenly I realized to myself, I said, oh my God, I have zero structure. I haven't been taught to be an educator, you know? And that was 15 years ago. And I think what in a way, like really in my mind, I think was a real breakthrough was that, and then, you know, I was explaining that to Dom, who does a podcast in the UK called How to Cut It. He was asking a question about all those emerging educators. Is that okay, or can everybody teach? And for me, I just think that in everything that we do, you know, teaching someone, you have to have very strong responsibilities. You know, with great powers, again to quote Spider-Man, but for great powers, great responsibilities. And I think if you are willing to teach someone, it means that you've been taught yourself already. You need to have a structure. You need to have an education system that has a specific way of working. And this is very, very important, because if you don't have this, you know, if you teach people the wrong way, or if you teach people without structure, or if you're not pedagogue or something like that, you can end up destroying almost someone's will and love for this craft. I've seen so many young assistants, you know, in the first 2 years leaving, not because they didn't like what they were doing, but they leave because they have a specific interaction with some people that they did not like.
Right. Well, so I guess, how did you build your own structure then? Because now you are renowned worldwide, really, for your education. And yes, it's beautiful work, but that also says a lot about your teaching style as well.
Yeah, I mean, thank you very much for a nice comment. You know, what I think is important first is, you know, specifically as well, since a lot of things have changed since January 2019, because it was a point where, you know, it was about delivering an information. And I came to realize a lot that at the time we had something like 12% of rebooking rates in our courses, where today we are on 85% of rebooking rates. So everybody everybody that comes in now to do a course, straight away they book two or three, you know, whether it's in a year or 2 years time, because we have a diary now up to 2 years ahead. And I think that shows a lot. That shows a lot that what we did is, it's not that people did not rebook because of the education system, but they did not rebook because of the way it was delivered. And I think what was very important is we have to, is super, super important. We have to understand, as an actual hair academy, you have to understand who your clients are and where are they coming from. Because it's like having the best product in the world, but not understanding who do you sell to and how you're selling it. You see what I mean? Suddenly, if you don't understand those two criteria, your product is definitely not the best in the world anymore, because someone's going to surpass you. So the idea is very simple. Is first, for me, I put myself into a situation back in the day when I used to be a salon stylist and when I was just about to spend, let's say, £1,000 to do a course of education. What is the need that I had as a stylist at the time? Well, I think, first of all, my biggest need was a little bit of fear of thinking, oh, maybe I'm not good enough. So the first thing for me is when a client, a student, come into the classroom, they need to feel at ease. They need to feel that they're going to have a great time. So this is why the social media has changed drastically to be a lot more appealing, I think, less kind of serious and so strong. Then the second part is when they finish the course. When someone finish a class, they need to want to fly back to the salon and cut hair again. They need to feel that they've learned something new, or even if they did not learn something new, they've actually learned all different tips and tricks and things that they can add to what they know already, and they want to practice, right? And I think the worst possible outcome that you can have on a student that comes to you on the course is that you've been too severe and too strict with them, that at the end, when they finish the course, they feel really, oh my God, I'm never going to be able to cut hair like those guys. Do you see what I mean?
Yes, and I think, totally.
I think for me, this is what is majorly, majorly important. After, in terms of the structure, a structure is a structure. Now, what we've done for us is that never changed from now to from before. It's not about reinventing the wheel, you know, because hair education is there is one foundation for everybody, right? People think, oh yeah, it was created in England in the 60s. Well, yes and no, because if you look, you know, Chanel in the 20s used to wear a bob, right? So those kind of very classical haircut, they've been existing for a long time. But
correct,
what we thought at MMP was very important was the fact that instead of telling someone, now I'm going to teach you this haircut, you have to do it this way, and then the person just learn it and reproduce it, we've actually tried to find a system that is more universal. So in that way, you teach people technique, you teach people shape, but you don't teach people haircut, because haircut have to always look good for the individual. So we kind of put forward much more the idea of learning a system that you can adapt to suitability and to each client. So it's a little bit like you would say clothes, right? You can go to a very nice tailor or a not so nice tailor, but a tailor is able to kind of measure you, size you, and do a clothes for you, right? And correct, it should be the same. Yeah. For haircut and color, exactly the same.
Yes. So I just want to make sure that the people listening didn't miss the wonderful sentence that you said. You have to know who your clients are and where they're coming from. So I know that you were talking about, you know, clients in your case are people taking education, but I also think that that fits very, very well for people in the salon and behind the chair as well. I once heard a quote from, there's a salesperson out here in the States, and one of the things is that he always said was, you know, you could have the best product in the world and it could be free, but nobody's going to get it if they don't know about it and if it's not right for them.
Exactly. Totally.
Yeah. So,
you know, from what you said earlier, when I said that, it's totally relevant to the way that we proceed in our salon as well. You know, I was just earlier on having a meeting with our salon manager called Rodrigo, and you know, I mean, I'm pretty sure, you know, Chicago is going to be the exact same situation as London. I mean, I know actually for a fact that Chicago is a financial city as well. So you got London, which has a massive financial side, but also you have a lot of people working in the art scene, a lot of people working in, I don't know, production, cinema, mm-hmm. actors, you know, young students, so on and so on. And I think what's very important is that you have to understand, you know, how you can, in all this mismatch of clientele, how you can reach yours, you know, because they can come from every single background. And I think this is always important as well in terms of what you do in the salon. It's very important that when a client comes in, there is a certain scent that represents your brand. There is a certain feel that represents your brand. Do you see what I mean? There's some kind of harmony where after through that, even if you open different salon around the world or even in different cities, you know, your brand has a recognition for all those kind of senses.
Yep. And you're building that brand every time.
Yes, yes, yes. It's a constant movement, isn't it, this one?
That's right. That's right. So you've built your system and it works for you. How are your classes different, do you think, than other, you know, hair academies out there?
I don't know if they are different. I think for us specifically at MMP, what we wanted to do, it's not to build something so we are unique, but it's more to build something so we were really trying to do it the way that we believe it's right.
Okay.
Because working in different company in the past, as a younger stylist doing a lot of different courses, I was never 100% certain about where we can head to, but I'm 100% certain about what we don't want. You know, this is 100%. So there's a lot of things that we do not do because we know for a fact that it's not working. So the way that we proceed so far, because of the business strategy that we've had, and you probably have the same situation in Chicago, but London rent are atrociously expensive, right? Now, I think probably in here is our academy in London is 100 square meter, and that represent probably something like $16,000 a month as a rent. So it's super, super high. So what happened is to be able to coexist, to cohabitate, the salon is also the academy. So we are doing a Tuesday to Saturday salon and then Sunday, Monday courses. Or we are doing Wednesday to Saturday salon and Sunday to Wednesday 3-day courses. Mm-hmm. So during the 3-day courses, what we wanted to do is that it was very important that there is a strong, a strong understanding of an actual PowerPoint system. So each day has quite an in-depth lecture, depending on the courses that we deliver. But we start usually by giving an information visually using PowerPoints, laminated headsheets, often like doll's heads as demonstrations. Then after we finish the lecture, we give a very short coffee break. Then after that, we're doing a demonstration. So the information giving in the lecture is given live into a demonstration format. Now, working with doll head or working with real model, one or the other. Then it's time for lunch. In the afternoon, we do a hands-on work session together. And now the third time, the third information, it's given to the students together. We do the haircut as well. So this is what I think was an absolute breakthrough in terms of education. And you know, you will never, never hear me say that we've done better than anybody else, because we haven't. We've just done different. Right. But there is one thing that we've done that I believe it's true, is we made doll head look cool. We made doll head a very, very important tool in the precision cutting. Because I think before MMP, you would have never seen a picture of a doll head anywhere. People were actually probably ashamed to put a doll head. Where I can tell you how, I mean, I don't know if you want to know, but I can tell you how the whole doll head started for MMP.
Yes, yes, let's do that.
Because, you know, this, I think, has been a good breakthrough as well for all the doll head factories across the world, because I think it's been booming. But basically, it's very interesting. It was the first ever MMP show. It was 2011. And then through a very good friend and client that I have in France called Titus, he was doing a 25th year anniversary of a big, big show called Metamorphoses. And basically, we were bringing all the UK models that were in our first collections. It was really happy. And like, you know, the show for us was such a major thing, and so on and so on. And then we almost totally forgot that the following 2 days, we had two what they call masterclass. So two time 20 students. And then suddenly I was like, wow. I have no idea who's done the casting for those 40 students, but and the model for us for the demo. But wow, we need 44 models. That's a big job. So suddenly, after the show is finished, I go to the organizer and I said, "Hey, Titus, I know it's not the time because you're having a drink and it's the end of the day. It's been very hard and stressful, but I just want to know a little bit about the organization for tomorrow. Who sorted out all the models?" And then he looks at me almost, I still remember his face, right? He looks at me like he's shocked for a few seconds. He doesn't even know what to say. And then he's like, JB, I've got four groups like you, right? No, it was three. I say, I've got three groups like you who do 2 days as well. Do you think I'm going to find 120 models? Like we are. I said, "You crazy."
It's your opinion that counts.
Did you hear my Apple Watch? It's your opinion that counts. I don't know why she stopped talking on her own. And basically, I was like, oh my God, you know, but what? And this is when he said, it's all on Dollhead. And I'm like, but what do you mean on Dollhead? We've never worked on Dollhead. I don't even know how these things work, right? So, because, you know, I worked in a company before that basically says that doll's head are evil, right. And everything has to be on real model. And we were like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. And I was like, you know what? I throw myself in the fire. Let's just do a little triangle graduation, little triangle, you know, like a graduated Bob, I guess, you know, some other name for it. Let's do that. And then we see how it goes. And you know what was amazing, Jacob?
It's
that during that time, for the first time at the time of almost 7 or 8 years of education, everybody start together, everybody do the STEM step together, and everybody finish together, which actually means that if someone has a question, it's relevant to the whole group. If someone basically have an issue, everybody can listen, right? Like no one have a problem because a model had to leave at 4:15 to get the kids at school. Right. No one starts to create a drama because you've cut someone's hair 1 inch more and the model starts to cry and kicking off in a room, you know? So suddenly he avoided so much, like, you know, a problem in terms of out of really what we're here for, which is cutting hair and learning and progressing together. But this time it's really about together working and learning together. And that was a real massive breakthrough. The only big, I would say, problem that you have, and this is, I think, probably why a lot of companies don't want to use Dollhead, it's the cost. Right?
Yeah.
Because if you look, it's very easy. Now running the academy in London, and we are doing some courses with real model as well. Yeah, we do both. But the thing is that if I have, let's say, I do a 2 day course, I've got 10 students and they have $2 each. Now, we're not talking about using any type of doll head here. We use very good doll head. That's why with a French brand called Exalto, we're actually creating now the MMP doll head that should come out in the next 2-3 weeks. We've been on development for over a year on that. But that doll head costs, let's say, $75, right? So $75, that's $750 for the first day. Double it up, it's 1,500 $500 for 2 days for 10 students just on Dollhead, right? If you're a well-established company and you have your clientele coming for a long time or your model coming for a long time, you actually charge $5 to $10, if more or less, but you charge money or free, right, for your model to have the haircut by the student. Right. So imagine the difference of cash flow if you multiply that by every week, by every month, by every year.
Yep.
Do you see what I mean? It's a whole big thing. This is why I totally understand where, you know, a lot of schools, if they have the chance to get models on their courses, good, because obviously it's a good cash flow running. But what I find very difficult is when you actually do a core fundamental course, it's super hard to find all your students the right model to practice on those fundamentals, because today everyone have a little undercut here or a fringe there or, you know, short layers here, and it's hard to learn pure technique, where in fact with Dollhead you can really learn those pure technique. This is why on all our core cutting classes we utilize Dollhead for the class, because I think it's just a brilliant tool.
Yes. Well, and I think you even said it, you revolutionized how Dollheads look, because even, you know, in beauty school, I always heard whenever we were doing anything on a mannequin head, oh, don't worry if it doesn't look good, it's on a mannequin head. And I can remember the first time that I was, you know, proud of a mannequin head, and I was doing a bald fade on one of my favorite mannequins, and I was like, wow, that looks like someone's actual head. So I think, you know, coming from a point of, well, let's not just accept that it's on a mannequin head, so it's not going to look great, but it's on a mannequin head, so we're going to make it look great, I think is a great thing that you've done for the industry and for the doll head companies even as well.
Well, thank you. But, you know, pure coincidence, but that led to an amazing educational tool at the end.
Well, I even think that on, you know, mannequin heads like that, you have to be a little bit more precise and measured in what you're doing, because the skin doesn't move and because the hair only sits this way and all of these other factors.
Very true. Yeah, it's very true. And you know what? And then also, I think, because sometimes you often get the idea of, yes, but, you know, sometimes, like, the very conscious body position that we do during the course, the conscious of the clean section, the da-da-da, it's not what I do every day in a salon. And, you know, right. For me, I said to them, I said, yes, of course not. But look, how did you learn how to drive? You learn how to drive in a very, very specific manner, following some very specific rules, right? And I know for a fact that non-drivers today owning a car and driving drive the way they pass their test, right?
True.
you know, and it's the same thing with anything that you learn. You break down into little pieces, into little segments, to try to understand the why behind everything that you do. And then after, when you go back to your normal environment, you can speed things up. You can have your routine, you can move. You see, it's all those things. But I think for me, like, coming to do an educational course, it's a moment where you actually, I'm going to breathe now. I don't have to do 7 haircuts in the whole afternoon. I'm just going to do one with those guys. So let's take some time, and I'm going to look this time. Okay, what do I usually do with my body position? How does it really work? Let's listen to them. Let's move like everybody does. And then after that, you finish the day, and then you see how you can fast track something to adapt to your salon. But you cannot just arrive into a course and think that what you have is a structure and we're going to make you better at your structure. It's never the point. The point is to actually come into something that you like, look at how a foundation it's made, and then after how you mold it into your way. Because at the end, doing a course, you cannot get or be changed in 3 days or 5 days. You know, it's utopian to think that you're going to, let's say, join a course at Tony and Guy, and in 3 days, you think you're going to be as good as the educators that's done that all his life. Do you see what I mean? Right. But if you get the right information and you get into a track that can gives you some nice insight that you can bring to what you do every day in a salon, what you do after, you carry on practicing and working hard, and automatically you get better. Automatically.
Yes.
And you know, this is a very interesting point, actually, because I was talking the other day to one of the students that Catherine, her name is. She's been coming to, if you listen to the podcast, Catherine, hi, you know exactly who you are. And she's been coming to us for quite some time now. And, you know, as I've been saying, you know, don't get frustrated sometime if there's something that you can't get in one go, because everything that we do, it's about repetition, right? Now, I've stopped doing salon for 15 years. Even if I was a successful salon stylist back in the day and I used to do 10, 12 haircut or 10, 12 client, 1 hour a client back to back, I have not done it for 15 years. You put me in a salon tomorrow, I am lost. There is no way I'm going to run a full column, because the last 15 years I've adapted a specific pace that is for education. Right. And this is the same thing on the other way. You can't have someone that is a super successful salon stylist doing those 10, 15 clients a day, suddenly jumping into the education in one go and suddenly being as amazing as it at it, because you just jump from one to the other. Everything needs time and adaptation, isn't it? I mean, I don't know what you think, but
I totally agree. Which, I mean, even kind of jumping off of that, I feel like, you know, at least out here, things are a little bit different. So I feel like in the surrounding salons, we've got these salon owners who are amazing stylists behind the chair, and they're fast paced, and they've got 10, 12, 15 people at, you know, in the day, and they're trying to train their assistants, but they've never, you know, they've never taken a class to teach. And their last class they took, you know, for haircutting or color was 10, 15 years ago. So now they're just trying to teach people how to cut corners, where, especially with assistants, you need to kind of show them the rules and show them how to, you know, do the haircut precision. And then later on, they can figure out their own ways to kind of speed it up.
I agree. Totally agree. Very true.
So I've got one more question before we start wrapping up.
Yeah, of course. Can't believe it's been already an hour. It was so fast.
I know, it's crazy. So you do a lot of photo shoots and you do a lot of these beautiful cuts and colors and all these beautiful models. My big question is, where do you find these models?
So, well, are you referring to like more professional shoot or just like general what you see on social media?
Both.
Everything. Yeah. So, I mean, the thing is that we're very lucky because we are now traveling in over 60 countries across the world giving education. We are strengthening our position with collaborating with Goldwell. Mm-hmm. And then this year we've done a lot of shows together. Actually, next week we are launching our new collection called Reversible in Vienna, which is going to be the global Zoom. It's 5,000 people there. And all the models that we find, none of them are professional. For a very, very simple reason is that professional models do not let you touch their hair. Otherwise, it costs a fortune. So we constantly scout models on the street. Now, you might say to me in London, and I agree with you if you say so, that we are lucky because there's a slight kind of edginess in this town with some areas of London like Shoreditch, like Camden Town. You've got even like our salon and academy is right in the center of London, which is Oxford Circus area, and you've got Topshop, which is one of the biggest fashion store in the world. So it's like an aquarium of fish for models in there, right? And basically we just go and talk to people. We go and hunt. We call it model hunting, basically. So we go and see, like, the team spend hours on finding the models, and then we just make castings, and then we make our decision. But for photo shoot, basically what happened, not for photo shoot, sorry, for shows, when we go abroad, we usually ask for pre-casting with the person we're collaborating with. And then when we are on site, we do another casting on site. So we usually end up, like when we were in China, we did a show in front of 10,000 people for Goldwell. We had, we needed 8 models, and I think we had about 70 models to choose from. Something nice. Like. Yeah. But it's not always the case. Sometimes you turn up in a place, you need 6 model, and you only have 5.
Oh, gosh.
So, but you know what? Magically, sometime, God knows how, but it always works out.
That's right. And who are you following on social media that you think that we should be following?
Oh, okay. Many. I'm going to tell you two amazing gentlemen in terms of barbering. One's called Johnny Baba. The other one is called John Keegan. Very, very good barbers. Now, it's very interesting. I always mention his name specifically when I go to France, because he's a French hairstylist that's been living in the States for many, many years. He has an atelier in New York. His name is Julien Dys. So Dys is D'YS. And I think Julien, as a hairdresser, has the most cover of fashion magazine ever. I think he's got 500 cover of Vogue. He's amazing. But he doesn't do haircuts. He's a real, like, session stylist, but old school, right? I don't know if you remember Eva Evangelista, when she cropped her hair off back in the 80s. It was him doing it. So, I mean, he's amazing. It really, really is amazing. Now, also, I mean, this is for all your listeners to your podcast, but we started something this year with the whole MMP family, because, you know, I haven't had the chance, because we didn't really talk about them, but I have the most amazing team. You know, Gianmarco, Fanette, Anthony, Rodrigo, Ada, now Sebastian, a younger stylist that is absolutely doing some amazing. He's going to be on stage. He's 18 years old on the front of 5,000 people in Vienna. To wow. launch our new collection. So he's brilliant. And we've done an event called Live With. Have you heard?
No, I have not.
So if you look on the MMP Instagram, I've just basically posted the, I'm going to show you because I've got it here. It's an event that is purely about sharing and solely about sharing. So basically, it's all on live. We've got a gentleman coming from Russia, Nikolai, who's an amazing barber. We've got an MBE called Mr. Errol Douglas, who's a fantastic hairdresser. We've got Tim Hartley, again, Tim, ex-international director of Sassoon and the person of VHS, who's coming to the event as well. We've got some people who do, Mr. JB Sentence is coming from France, and he does wigs for all the big shows, like, you know, Gucci, Prada, YSL, and so on and so on. So if you want to follow some amazing people, go into the MMP Instagram and look at Live With, and we've tagged every single person that do the event. And on the 4th of October at 7:30 p.m. in the evening in the UK, to start off Salon International, we do the next Live With. So you have 14 international hair educators from different background, men's cutting, wigs, precision cutting, coloring, that will share their craft totally for free on broadcast.
Wow, that's awesome.
So that's going to be quite good. And you see all of them there. All of them, they're amazing.
And where can we find you on social media?
It's all about the MMP. So we will eventually change the name very soon, but so far it's still Mazelaine Palmer. So we've got that on Instagram. I think we're about almost to reach 85,000 followers. So thank you all guys. That's amazing. We've got Facebook as well, same name. And do you know what? I've never really been so much into Twitter, actually. I've never really believed that that worked so well for the hairdressing industry for some
reason.
You're
not missing much. It's fine.
It's not that I don't understand it, but I think it doesn't really. I think in our industry, we're all about looking at things, right? Mm-hmm. So we need to see images, we need to listen to people, we need to see videos. That's and right. And I've never really seen, I think Twitter is more about just the quick sentences of people follow your every step.
That's right.
Yeah.
And lastly, where can we find you in person? Where's your next couple of classes?
So we are heading to an amazing time, actually. I am going to be in London, I think only 6 nights in the next 3 months because I've got a lot of travels, but I'm basically going to be in Vienna in the next few days for Global Zoom. Then I'm going to be in going to Salon International in London. Mm-hmm. And after I'm flying to, what's the name, Vietnam. I'm going to 3 weeks education over there in Vietnam.
Wow, very nice.
Yeah.
Well, JB, thank you so much for podcasting with me and sharing your stories. This was wonderful.
Jacob, that's brilliant. Thank you so much. That's brilliant. Thank you so much for thinking of me for the podcast as well. And hi to all your listeners.
Of course. And I hope to be in a class of yours very, very soon.
No problem. Well, you know, but this one is fully booked in November. We have something in Canada, but we're going to start to do a lot of things together over North America. So hopefully you can come around. That's no problem.
Ooh, yes. Perfect. Well, you have a great rest of your day and congratulations one more time.
Thank you so much, Jacob. That's perfect. I'll speak to you soon. Yeah, thank you for reaching out.
Of course. Have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Oh, hey, you're still here? You're still listening? Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode. You can check us out here every Wednesday. Make sure to subscribe wherever you are listening and leave us a comment and leave us some reviews. It helps other people find us. If you want to find out more about Phoenix Salon Education, you can find us on Instagram at phoenixedu or at phoenixedu.com. Remember that it's spelled FENIKSEDU. There you can find out about our upcoming classes or even let us know your story. Maybe we'll record it someday. Thank you guys so much and see you next Wednesday.